of time.
O'clock.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Hopefully everything works. Is everything working? Like the microphone and everything like that? Because I was moving some shit around, so.
Yeah. So, we got a new camera coming too. I see an image here. Let me see if I got audio.
I mean, I think it's on. It looks like it's on. And nobody says no sound.
Yeah. Yeah, you got audio.
Yeah, okay. Just worried about it.
So it should be good.
Because you know how it is, you breathe on something and it kind of like turns itself off. You know how it does around here.
Yeah, I bought a new camera today. It's an action cam. Yeah, it's like a Chinese copy of a GoPro. It's a pretty good one, though. It's called a Brave 7, I think it was called. Got pretty good reviews. It's half the price of a GoPro, but it's similar performance for what we're looking for. We can use it as a webcam here. It's 4K. We can use it as a webcam here, and we can do it for our other fucking efforts that we're doing. You guys know what I'm talking about. And it's an action cam. If it's like it, you know, it's like the size of a damn ice cube. You can flip it around. It's got screens on both sides. But when we use it as a webcam, we're probably going to have to run a couple of test screens. We can do it on off hours.
Yeah.
Before the show, make sure everything's running good, and figure out how to use it. So, just giving you a heads up that some of the visuals are going to change,
maybe
a little bit better.
Well, hopefully we'll see.
Yeah, if everything works out good, I might get another one. So we'll have two, maybe three. They're not that expensive, 150, you know, 160.
Yeah, that's not bad for what you get. I mean, it seemed like it was well reviewed.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then what else? Murder Hornet's in there telling me to get my shit together. Dude, I just had to return a bra. You don't fucking understand a man's pain. Okay?
Well, he did. Well, he always he insists on doing everything like literally 5 minutes before the show starts. And he's always
I'm doing
like,
other shit too. Which makes it seem like I don't do anything until the show starts. I did all kinds of shit today, man. I didn't say that.
I'm just saying you could have waited to return that until after the show. But
you didn't tell me that. You just told me.
I know, but that didn't mean you had to do it right now.
You should have messaged me back. You should have messaged me that it didn't fit. Got her this damn... No, man, I ain't talking about it. One of them damn balconette bras that just grabs from the bottom. See?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's hard buying bras online, though.
You see his piercings and shit through the shirt? Yeah.
It's hard buying bras online, though, because...
Right.
And especially this one, it kept telling you, well, buy two or three sizes bigger than your regular size
because
it runs small.
Smaller.
And so... or yeah, two or three sizes smaller or whatever. And so we got it, but it was, like, way too big.
It said two or three sizes. Buy it two or three sizes smaller than your normal size because the size chart's all fucked up.
Yeah.
It said a 38 chest was 3XL. It's like, nah.
So, I was but like, I, damn, I didn't think I was
But I got bad. Her an XL. It says a two sizes down. It's still fucking too
it's
big.
It's still too big.
Still fucking too big.
I probably should have just got should've a regular.
It's got to be like a medium.
Medium or a large.
Yeah. Because it's stretchy anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it was way too big.
Yeah.
Camp Guy said, I'm just about to get a rear view camera for our travel trailer. I have absolutely no way to see directly behind it when it's hooked up. Yeah, I'm really glad they actually have that as an option nowadays. So you can actually see when you're backing up so you don't back over somebody.
I wouldn't mind to have a heads up display inside my motorcycle helmet. It has a camera on the back of my helmet. Inside
that
the helmet,
might
just
be
a
useful.
Just a hole in it. Instead of so you'd have to run mirrors. You can just see behind you. Eyes in the back of your head, literally. That'd be really good.
Although, would it be, like, confusing?
No.
No, I guess not.
No.
It'd be just like looking in your rear view mirror.
It'd be just like, it'd be like having a rear view mirror up there.
Kevin Donovan said, what size cup is he?
He or she, bitch.
You.
This is a fucking pure fucking muscle, dude. Yeah, in girl sizes, I'd probably be a B.
You probably would be.
Yeah. But it'd be a tight B. Man, stop fucking with me.
Oh, you love it then. Thank you very much, Jeffy Art. Tonight I'm starting my new summer job as bar security, so I can't be on for too long, but I'll be catching you guys later when
that's
I come
right,
home. Oh, that's awesome. You got a new job.
Yeah, go down there.
Kick some drunk people
out. Yeah, fuck them up.
Well, I mean, if they deserve it, yeah, kick them out. They'll just, like, kick people out randomly, obviously. But, yeah. So, yeah, it's Wednesday night. It's our main show. And, once again, true crime has won in the poll.
Yeah.
But that's okay with me, because I like doing true crime shows.
About a South Korean serial killer we mentioned in another show. They caught him.
Yeah, and actually, okay. So, we did, I think it was back on episode 151. And I don't even remember. That was prior to us doing live streams and stuff. Yeah, because we didn't start doing like live stream and video and stuff like that until like episode 200, right? Mm-hmm. So this was when it was still a slideshow. So it was like a long time ago. And we did a show that was just called like Korean Crime or something like that. And it had this case, the Hwaseong serial killer case, and it also had the Frog Boys, like the four boys that had disappeared and then they turned up murdered later on. So I had kind of like forgotten about it, but then somebody messaged me and said, well, you know, you should do a revisit on the Hwaseong case because they they closed the case. Like, they know who did it. Like, the guy confessed and everything. And they actually caught him. Well, they knew it was him, or they were pretty sure it was him back in 2019, but I don't think they announced it until like 2020. So it's been like a couple years. I just didn't hear about it. Thank you, Murder Hornet, for KY Jelly for the OnlyFans project. Thank you. We probably will need that.
Like, two won't like... cover it, dude. Two won't cover that.
We've spent so much money already on this, on like so supplies for this.
Yeah.
Supplies for this shit already. Jeffy Art said on his bar security job, on the job, I'll ask myself, what would Tom do? Well, don't do that. don't do what Tom would do necessarily. Ben says, my mother has one of these new modern cars she got last year, and it's like a computer game. Cameras all around, and it beeps and shows you lines of how far to turn, etc. See, that's pretty cool. Hey there, Hugo. Oh, yeah, we have to... Did you make his shirt?
No, I never made it because I never got the money.
Yeah, we got the money.
Oh, you got the money?
Okay. Yeah, I got the money and I got the address.
All right, I'll do it tomorrow.
So just print it tomorrow and we will mail it before the weekend.
All right, should I get you a medium?
I guess so.
Look at what it says medium is.
I mean, it's it doesn't matter, obviously.
It says medium is 29.
See, I don't know. Just maybe get a large. What'd you get before?
3XL.
Oh, well, just get a large then.
Think so? It has a lot of stretch in it, though.
Well, I don't know. I just don't want to go the opposite way and it'd be too small. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. These must be Chinese sizes.
Yeah, I'm like, since when is it just like...
It might be sold out. Yeah, it was sold out. Sold out in large. Okay. Only pink ones.
We'll get a medium then.
All right. Okay, go back to the show, Jen. I'll buy it. Look at that chin.
He can't even focus on like one thing on the show.
I'm trying. Look, man, I'm enthralled by bras.
Right? He's getting distracted.
Yeah, get distracted by bras. There's nothing even in that bra. It's just the bra. So where's the shit?
I don't.
Why can't we see that?
It's
shit?
Just whiting.
Oh, there. It's because that one. See, looks so good on you. Okay. All right, we're gonna get a meeting.
All right. Ben says, talking about the car, on the downside, she says it detects old lines still painted on the road and tries to grab the steering wheel from her to correct. Oh, shit. Well, that's not good. That's not good. That would probably scare the shit out of me. So as I mentioned, somebody told me that this case had been solved. So, like, a couple years ago, and I hadn't heard about it. So I thought it would be a good time to do a revisit, and especially because... You know, back when we did this show, like I said, it was still a slideshow, and I think we were still trying to keep the show down to an hour.
Right.
Remember when we did that?
Remember when we tried that?
Yeah, and, well, we did it for a while.
Yeah.
But it kind of necessitated me editing a lot of stuff out, like, to keep it down to, you know what I mean?
Well, we were following the rules of that era.
Right.
They were saying that, well, you know, the algorithms and the statistics say, if it's longer than an hour, then people don't watch it. That's the way the old YouTube was. Now everything's long form format.
Well, now it just seems like it's all over the place or like whatever. You know what I mean?
Actually, I heard that like, you know, a couple hours, that's quite kind of, that's what is the most common. That's what people evidently watch. They like long form stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because they're driving and sleeping and, you know.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, that's kind of why, like, a lot of channels I like that tell this scary story, like supercuts and stuff. Yeah, some of those are like 4 or 5 hours long.
Yeah. Kills time.
Well, yeah, because I like to put them on in the background, like, while I'm working and things like that.
That's so what other people are doing.
Listening to scary stories.
Makes your fucking work day go by fast.
Yeah, that's true. Danny Rowling said it'd be cool to see Tom make a YouTube short video of him making the shirt.
There's not going to be anybody here that can record it.
Yeah, because I'll be at work.
Yeah.
But
I could set up a... I might be able to put a...
You could set it up on
the tripod. And just have me just fucking run it through.
Yeah. That might be neat. You could put it up on the channel as a short.
Just put it up on as a short, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a large Pliskin or a little Pliskin image.
I imagine the large
one. The large one, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, so... I don't even remember what we were talking about. We keep getting, like, distracted and stuff.
Shit happens.
But you... yeah. But you kind of sort of remembered this.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked doing this. I wanted to revisit this show, too, because, you know, you were stationed in Korea for a little
while. Yeah. And I remembered, like, you know, the descriptions of where these bodies were found and stuff. I thought it was just schoolgirls, but you said, no, it was old ladies, too.
Yeah, it was just kind of like whatever women were around. It seemed like opportunity.
Right. It was near like, if I remember correctly, like bus stops, people waiting for the bus at school time in the morning, that kind of shit. And they were finding them down inside the drainage ditches that are on the sides of the road in Korea. They're lined with concrete. It's kind of a nice little 3 foot deep, 4 foot wide drainage ditch on either side of the roads. It snows a lot, rains a lot during monsoon season. There's just a real expedient place to roll somebody off down in that ditch, and cars may not see them because they're pretty deep.
Hugo said he wants a little Pliskin logo.
A little one, okay.
Okay, so just don't forget. Just a large shirt, but a little one. But, yeah, so I was going to say, and I think I brought this up before, and I think I've reviewed this movie too, but if you've seen the Bong Joon-ho movie that came out in 2003 called Memories of Murder, he's the guy that made Parasite, you know, all of that. It's kind of loosely based on this case. Now, obviously, at the time that the movie came out, they didn't know who the guy was. And so, famously, you know, this is kind of a spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, but, you know, it's 20 years old at this point. There was a great scene at the end where the main character, who's, like, the, you know, investigator that's, like, looking into the case, like, looks straight at the camera as though he's looking out in the audience, like, looking to see if he can find the killer. And so they're speculating, too, that, well, since they know who the killer is now, that he probably did go and see the movie because he seemed like that kind of... But he probably didn't give a shit because when they caught him, it seems like he's a little bit of a psychopath.
Yeah.
A little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, and this case also has... Because, like I said, it's been a long time since we did it, so I don't even remember how much we went into this. But this case also has a really, really sad case of a dude that was wrongfully accused... of one of the murders and spent more than 20 years in prison.
Damn. Never get that time back.
And actually, if you look on YouTube, there's a really good 2-part documentary about this case. There's not a huge amount of other stuff about it, but there is like a really good, and each part is like 45 minutes. And they have like an extensive interviews with that guy because he's out now, obviously. You know, of course. Poor motherfucker. I mean, it's like the whole situation is just like really, really terrible. But, you know, he's out now and he seems pretty chill. I mean, seeing what happened to him, it's just, you know what I mean?
Somebody's trying to,
Pookie.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why are you being bad?
Yeah. She's trying
to get attention. She wants attention.
Yeah.
She just wants attention.
Yeah.
Camp Guy said, my daughter went to South Korea with her dance school traveling performers when she was about 11 years old. They did Tennessee buck dancing and clogging in South Korea.
Yeah.
Man, like I remember doing clogging in elementary school.
That would be like something the Koreans would want to see. Yeah. Oh, it was so cultural.
Yeah. Show me the dance of your people.
Yeah, show me the dance of your people. So these are the clogging. Tribal. These are the tribal outfits of your tribe. Yeah.
Did they have to put on, like, big cowboy boots and, like, checkered shirts?
Probably checked shirts and shit.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't really dress
them.
Well, some people do, but when they go to the country bar.
The skirts all had aprons and bibs on them. Like they had.
Yeah, remember when everybody was wearing those?
Mm-hmm.
Even Tom wore those back in the day.
Yeah, right. Right.
So yeah. I don't think... Oh, boy, Tammy just joined the channel.
Thank you very much,
Tammy. Welcome to Flash Bulbs.
Give it to them flash bulbs. Tammy, break it off them flash bulbs. Trying to get free porn. I gave out some samples, fucking...
Yeah, you did. I
gave out a few samples. Yeah, the response was good. Ran it by some of my friends in the industry. Because you guys are going to make a lot of money. Well, we were getting
I hope so.
We were getting job offers and shit. But no. Nah. You don't want to go pro.
What? Yeah, I don't want to do
that. You don't want to go pro.
I don't want to do
You got to fuck all these dudes.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, they're... No, we're not going to be working with each other. Like, no, we're going to... You and the gangbang Thursday and this and this and then you go... It wouldn't work.
No. It wouldn't work. I would not like that.
Uh-uh.
Like I said, that's the only reason I wanted to do this, because it was just me and you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want a bunch of random people involved.
Well, another thing, you know, I got permission to talk about it. One of our regulars, he and his girlfriend are making content.
Along those same
Yeah.
lines.
And he's sending it and sharing it.
Pretty spicy.
Yeah, her name is Misty. She was cute. She wants to work with Jen. I showed Jen the video. She's like, oh, yeah, she's cute. Yeah. He's in Texas. He wants to come down here. he told me I could say the name is Oscar. Oscar Perez. He's in here sometimes.
Yeah, he's sometimes in the chat.
Yeah, I'll show y'all.
I'll show you the tape stuff. He said that you could...
What's that? Yeah, he said I could. I cleared it with him. Okay.
Yeah, Tammy says, oh, I'm already a patron. Yeah, that's right. Just splitting it up a little.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I think this
Whatever works.
I think this phone has... It was either this or the other phone. Some of this I can't show.
Well, obviously.
That's on the other phone. Keep going, Jim.
Okay. Murder Hornet said, Jen, you look very good. Thank you. That test must have worked good on the weight loss. Yeah, I've actually lost a little bit of weight in the last couple weeks just because I haven't been eating all that much. I just kind of have... Actually, last night when I got home, I was so busy, I didn't even eat dinner or anything. I just... And then Tom was at bike night, so I came home and I had all this shit I had to do, and I did all this stuff, and then it was like 10 o'clock, and he came home... And I was like, oh my God, I'm so fucking tired. And then I just went and laid down and put a blanket over my face. And he comes up and he shoves a turkey sandwich at me.
Yeah.
He's like, you have to eat something.
Yeah, well, she complained. I didn't get anything to eat and I'm feeling good.
I wasn't complaining. I was just saying I didn't even have time to eat anything. Because normally when he goes to bike night, you know, I just stop at the deli or the Chinese restaurant or something and just bring something home. But I didn't really have time to do that because I had too much shit to do. And then, like, at the end, I was like, man, I'm not really that hungry anyway, fuck it. And so I wasn't really worried about it. But then it was starting to get late, and I'm like, now it's kind of too late to eat, but, you know. But then he just, like...
I hooked her up.
He brings a turkey sandwich at, like, 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
He's like, you have to eat something. It was super funny. But, yeah, so that's probably why. I don't think for 2 weeks I haven't... I've been skipping breakfast, and I've been, like, I cut way back on lunch and shit like that. Today, though, Tom made an eggplant lasagna that was actually really good that we just had an hour or two ago. But, yeah, so let's get into the case before it gets super, super late. I don't have a ton of stuff. Well, maybe I do. I have, like, 2.5 pages or something like that. But, okay.
Yeah.
Are you getting the other thing? Should I not?
Yeah.
Should I not get into
it? Yeah,
yeah.
Don't get into
it. You'll distract me.
Hold on. Michelle Misty. Got to cover that up. That's Misty.
Kevin says, "What is flashbulbs?" That's just like what we call our membership.
Yeah.
That's just what we call our, like, you know, you can become a YouTube member.
She was telling Jen that she's 19. She's not 19. She's fucking 30.
Because I kind of laughed when he told me that. I was like, oh my God, we're robbing the cradle.
This is a good one, too. They're at the bar, and she reaches up inside Oscar's pant leg, in his short legs. Oops, hold on.
Whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
He's at the bar. Okay, so that's who we're talking about.
But yeah, that's just, if you become a YouTube member, we just called it flash bulbs because that's what Tom always says all the time. Like, you know, shows those flash bulbs, I think.
Yeah.
So I thought
I got that from Airplane.
To call the membership then.
That was the two black dudes there after going into the airplane and the news camera, the new, you remember from Airplane, the first one?
Yeah.
The two black dudes are going into the airport, and the news crew was out front taking pictures, and it fucking, the paparazzi was there, and he's going, let me see some of them flash bulbs. Did you remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, well, for some reason, seeing that shit, the money popping up on there, it was like seeing flash bulbs. It's give me some of them flash bulbs. that's the joke. I've been saying it for a long time, and yeah, the context has been lost. It started between me and Red, my uncle. That's where it first came from.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because whenever he wanted something from me, he said, let me see some flash bulbs. But he might want candy. Like, he might have some M&Ms, you know. So let me get some flash bulbs. Get some flash. That's where it started.
Meanwhile, kids today are like, what the fuck is a flash bulb?
Well, we used to watch Airplane. We fucking loved it. It was back when cable would play the same shit over and over again, like fucking, you know, HBO, early HBO.
Do you remember back in the old days? Now, this was when I was a kid, and I'm, you know, old. But remember you had those cameras that had the little flash, but you had to like click them on there.
Yeah, and it's spin.
Yeah.
And you fucking you advance the film mechanically and the fucking time it's spin.
Yeah.
Caveman like, shit.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you had to take the pictures to the fucking store to get developed. Crazy. So you couldn't even take like dirty ones or anything like that. I mean, you could, but.
Kevin's interesting. He loves Airplane. Yeah, it was a good movie.
It's still funny. Like, we watched it probably like a year ago. And I'm like, yep, still funny.
The fucking captain of the airplane's up there talking to a little kid. So, do you ever see Gladiator movies? Men's prisons. making a move on a little kid. Fucking funny.
Yeah, it's a hilarious fucking movie. Like I said, it's still funny. Airplane 2 isn't quite as funny, but the first Airplane is like still really funny, I thought.
Yeah.
A lot of the, because we talk a lot about how comedy doesn't always...
Yeah.
Age all that well, but I think that one actually did. Just because most of the jokes are so fucking ridiculous. So are we ready now? Can I actually like get into talking about the case? Then you can throw in if you have anything to say about Korea in general.
Yeah.
So now there are actually a couple of different famous, and I think that maybe there's one serial killer that's more famous in Korea. So a lot of times I started watching this one YouTube video that I thought was about this case, but it was actually about the other one. I'm like, wait, well, this isn't right. But you know what I mean? But this one, probably the second most famous serial killer. And it happened between 1986 and 1991. So this happened in a city called Hwaseong. And at the time, not sure about now, it was like really, really rural. It's like up in the mountains. Basically, I was watching the documentary about it, and they had some people that had lived there at the time, like when this was all going on, and they said basically it's not even really a town, it was just like a collection of houses, and like everyone kind of knew each other, you know what I mean? So it was like way out in the middle of nowhere. So during this time period, this, you know, 4 or 5 years between 86 and 91, there were a very long series of rapes and murders, that were, you know, all against women, but it wasn't any particular type. It was all kind of like, it was teenagers, some women in their 20s, and then some elderly women as well. So it seemed like it was just kind of like a crime of opportunity type of thing. And for 33 years, this crime was unsolved. And as I said, a dude was actually wrongfully convicted and served a significant amount of time in prison. But as of 2019... they actually announced that they knew who did it. Although, we're going to get into this in a little bit too, but at the time that the crimes were going on, South Korea had a 15-year statute of limitations on murder.
Yeah, that's weird.
So if you got away with murder for 15 years, then you were off scot-free. But if they caught you, they couldn't convict you for it.
Yeah. Sounds crazy, but there's probably reasons for it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're... Because they're saying it's maybe the evidence is so old by then. When the law was written, it was probably like a protection.
Right.
Because of being accused against something that was falsely accused against an old murder, because they're protecting people, probably. Like, well, that evidence is so old that it's probably, you know what I mean? The chances of it being relevant is probably past, you know what I mean? It's probably what they're talking about. Because it could be that... You could take an old... If you had an enemy, you could find an unsolved murder that happened a long time ago and say he did it, and there'd be no way to disprove it type of deal.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it might be what they're talking
about. And they kind of went into this a lot on the documentary, too, is that during the time period that the murders were going on, like the late 80s, this was kind of during a kind of tumultuous time in Korean history. They were going through democratization process, but there was still, like, a lot of public protest against, like, police brutality and, like, human rights abuses and things like that. So the cops at the time were very authoritarian. They didn't really have much in the way of scientific investigative tools. Basically, they were just like, well, we're going to bring in a dude and beat a confession out of him, and voila, it's solved. That's pretty much like what, and that's pretty much what happened in this case, too.
Yeah. To be honest, you know, I lived there for a year and worked with both militaries, ours and theirs, and was up near the JSA camp. I was at Camp Greaves a long time ago. It's gone now. Now my old camp is now a museum. They do, like, fucking tours through there. This is the way it used to be, you know. South Korea was a vassal state to the United States. It was a military dictatorship, dressed up to look like a democracy. That's not. It was a dictatorship. Now, there was some justification for it. It was under the stress of war. When you're under the stress of war, democracies can't really work that well. You'll get your ass kicked if you let two opposing sides inside a country fight each other. They'll use the enemy as like a fulcrum to fucking overcome their political enemies inside the country. Either side will do it. So when you're under the stress of long-term war like that, and you're as relatively weak as South Korea was, you're better off as a dictatorship. It's more simple. It's more stable, which is a very un-American thing to say, but it's very true. Dictatorships are extremely stable. Look at North Korea. It's uncollapsible because it's collapsed so long ago. It's whittled itself down to being a trilobite. It can't get any more simple or any more primitive. Anything that could happen to that country has already happened to it. So it's extremely stable.
Ben says, you have to have some statutory limit on criminal charges. Yeah. Our Western no time limits on murder charges system is quite anachronistic. I agree in some circumstances. Serial murder, I think, would be an exception.
Get some ice.
You know, other criminal charges, it's like, I'm not bothered about, you know, lesser charges, like, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years down the line. Like, if they don't catch you, then, you know, they write it off or whatever. I don't really have a problem with that. In this case, though, because the crimes were so heinous and so egregious and there were so many of them, you know, I definitely think that they should. And the thing about it was they kind of lucked out because, you know, spoiler alert, he was already in jail for something else when they found out who he was. Because had he been caught for the murders, they did overturn the statute of limitations for murder in 2015, partially in response to this particular case, but it wasn't retroactive, meaning that, you know, they couldn't go back and apply it to people that had already, you know what I mean? It was just going forward. So even if he was still walking around free and they were like, oh, that's the guy, they couldn't have done anything to him. But luckily, like I said, he was already in prison for something else, so he's in prison, even though it's not for this, even though he did, but they know he did do this. So yeah, so like I said, this happened between 1986 and 1991. This was right before you were in Korea, right? Because you were in Korea in the early 90s?
Yeah, 1990 to 91.
Oh, okay, so this was about the time that it was going on, like the tail end of it. So yeah, so as I mentioned, Hwaseong is a, you know, really kind of out the middle of nowhere sort of place. And hence one of the reasons why, because I think a lot of people said, well, a lot of the victims were, you know, were women that were, like, walking to or from a bus stop, like, to or from work, like, really early in the morning or really late at night, and they're like, well, what the hell are they doing that for? One, it's a small town, and serial killing was practically unheard of in Korea at this point. And also, because the town was so rural, it didn't really have a lot of bus routes. Like, it didn't come through there very often. So it's just kind of like, well, you had to take the bus whenever it came, like, whenever your job was or whatever. So it wasn't it wasn't real uncommon for women of all ages to be walking around, you know, alone at night, like to or from a bus stop, or like walking a long way, like back to their house. So that's why. Because that's pretty much where most of the victims were attacked. So the first victim of the serial killer, who was not identified at the time, was actually a 71-year-old woman, and her name was Lee Wan Im. Now, she had been visiting her daughter, and this was September 15th, 1986, and this was kind of like, you know, late afternoon, evening. It was about 6 o'clock in the evening. Now, they actually found her body in, like, a pasture. Now, initially, because she was kind of off on the side of the road, initially they thought that it was a hit and run, because one, they don't think of, like, it's not a serial killer, you know what I mean? They wouldn't think of that, because it just didn't happen all that often. And she was just laying on the side of the road, so they thought initially it was a hit and run, so they didn't really treat it as a murder at first. But then, like, when she went in, she was autopsied, it turned out that she had been raped and murdered. Now, one interesting thing, she'd been strangled, actually. One interesting thing that one of the guys on the documentary said was that, one of the things, too, was that in 1986, the police didn't really believe that an elderly woman could be raped. Like a rapist wouldn't go after an elderly woman.
There's got to have context for this, man. Korea is the most homogeneous society on the planet. They're damn near cousins. They're just all related. They've been there forever. This type of violent crime is not common there. Sexual assaults usually happen in, like, you know, the Itaewon district or in other places that's kind of like the party parts of the town. And it's between horny old dudes and young working women of the night. If you understand. That's where mostly going on. But and, you know, that's where that kind of shit goes on. So they don't. It's the old woman. Who'd want to have sex with an old woman? That's what they're thinking.
That's what the guy said.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, that's why.
That's ridiculous.
That's why at first they didn't really treat it as kind of like.
Yeah, that's very un-Korean, very un-Asian. For them, sexuality is something for young people. You know, having sex with a woman over 30? God, that's ridiculous.
Gross.
Whoa. Look at Japan.
So gross.
Look at Japan. I mean, you know. The sexual orientation of Japan. Just listen to Japanese female porn stars that come here.
Old bats over 30 years.
Yeah. if you ask me, some of the best looking of the Japanese porn stars come to the United States. They're nice figures on them and in their 30s and stuff. And they would say, why do you come here? And he goes, well, all our fans are here. What about Japan? He goes, nah, the Japanese guys, they like skinny girls that look like they're about 13. That's really the top thing there. You know, the West has, I would say, more healthy tastes. My opinion. And I think it's right. But there's something about skinny women with no shape that just doesn't turn me on at all.
I mean, like I said, everybody
it's like child stuff. It's like
I do kind of feel like
the Japanese are into what's called neoteny.
Yeah.
You know, which is a type of look that is childlike look. Kawaii. You know. I mean, if a girl's got nice cans, she's going to tie them down to make herself look flat-chested. That's how ridiculous it is. It's ridiculous. Here, man, fucking girl be sporting them things, man. Because the dudes respond. Japanese guys don't respond to that. Koreans are kind of like that, but not as much. The Koreans are kind of like the Latins of the fucking Asia. They're the sexy ones.
They're the sexy ones.
I said that one time, the Korean girl said, thank you, in the comments. Yes, thank you. Yeah, yeah. No, Koreans are fucking spicy for Asia.
Yeah, well, and the thing about it, and a lot of the people in the documentary, which, you know, they talked to cops that investigated the case, people that lived in the, you know, in the town when it was going on and stuff like that. So, you know, it's, I think it was like an American or a British produced documentary, but it was all in Korean, you know, so it all had subtitles. But, yeah, a lot of them were saying that it was more the era than anything else. Like, they just, because they weren't used to, you know, really caring that much or having that, you know, all this kind of violent crime, sexual assault, serial murder. They didn't really have a lot of that going on, or a lot of it wasn't reported. And because the cops were kind of like corrupt, or they didn't really give a crap, or they just kind of, you know, they covered a lot of stuff up. And actually one of the criminologists on there, she said that she believed that there were probably a lot more of the crimes, like rapes or murders or whatever, like in this series, that were kind of swept under the rug, like just because because the police looked bad, because the public kept having this huge outcry, all these murders kept happening in this small town, and they're just like, why aren't you doing anything? Like, why aren't you catching him? Because, you know, so they were under a lot of pressure to just kind of, you know, put anybody up there, and that's what ended up happening to this poor guy, which we'll get into in a little bit. But they just wanted to, like, solve it or look like they were doing something. But they didn't really have, because they said at the time, they didn't have the capacity to do DNA. They didn't have, really, all they could do was blood typing. And, you know, according to the criminologists that were talking on there, they said pretty much the cops at that time in South Korea were almost entirely dependent on confession. So like I said, if you weren't saying what they wanted you to say, then they would essentially, like, beat it out of you. Or they would, like, torture it out of you.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, well, we got him.
Yeah.
Case closed. It would be like that.
Yeah.
And that was Koreans saying this, like criminologists and stuff that had been around at the time. They were like, yeah, it was not a good time.
Yeah, that's not unique to Korea.
No, of course not.
China and Japan are like that too. It's just part of their culture. They're very authoritarian. And if the authorities were wrong, they will never admit that they're wrong. Never. They'll let you go if you commit. If they're wrong, they will come at you and say, look, we're wrong. If you go ahead and just confess, we'll let you go. Wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
You know, it's because going back thousands of years, probably back to China, to the concept of Chinese emperor worship, the emperor is never wrong. He's celestial. To admit that he's wrong and fallible, then people won't believe in it. That's the thinking. Which, man, that's no. No, dude, not at all. Government is an amorphous thing, constantly changing. It has to be beaten into shape by the people. The people have to keep government under control. That's just, read the Enlightenment writings of the fucking 1700s of how bad government can get when they're talking about France and England. Although England was actually pretty good in the 1700s. It's just that we were pissed at them. They were telling us what to do over here in the colonies, and we just got sick of that.
Eventually, you're not the boss of us.
You're not the boss of me. Yeah, that's exactly what that's really what it was.
Throwing all your tea in the harbor, goddamn.
Yeah. The Redcoats were actually good. It's just they were unrealistic. They wanted us to fucking not make our own shovels and buy their shovels. That kind of stupid shit. Just was very impractical.
Like, dude, I just want a shovel.
I just want a shovel,
I can
dude.
Just make one.
Yeah.
You don't have to put it on the boat and put it on.
Forcing us to make wooden shovels because, you know, now you have to make a wooden shovel. Because if you want a real shovel, you got to buy it from us. The empire doesn't work for long.
Ben says their legal systems are based on confession. Yeah, that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
In ancient China, they couldn't convict someone unless they confessed, and torture was allowed.
Yeah. So they got convictions.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's what happened during, like, the witch trials.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just going to pull your thumbs off until you say you're a witch, okay?
Yeah. Break your legs slowly with these crushing screws.
Right.
And then you'll tell us what we need to tell. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Even the Romans didn't do that kind of shit. You know, thousands of years before, 1,500 years before, even the Romans weren't doing
it. I mean,
to
me, that's just intensely dumb.
Yeah.
And it just seems like somebody that just wants to do it because they're sadistic more than they actually think they're getting truth out of anybody.
Yeah. Although, in the defense of the medievals, it wasn't uniform. There were certain areas where they weren't about that. They were like,
right.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't
It wasn't across the board.
Uh-uh.
It's just we're remembering the places where it was bad. There were parts of the Middle Ages that were pretty good in certain areas. Like, you know, you could go there and it would be like a foreign country. You could live all right if you were a modern person. The other places, you didn't want to go there. The Roman trial was more about show business. They just put you up in front of a crowd and just argued the case, and if you were a good entertainer, you might get off.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was no real concept of evidence or forensic evidence. You just had to kind of argue for yourself that you didn't do it. and it was just a crowd of people.
Like I said, they
a mob drunk.
They didn't have forensic science back then. So it's not like they had any way to back anything.
Yeah.
It was basically who had a better fucking story.
Who had a better story, right?
Camp Guy says, The Pillars of the Earth is a great novel by Ken Follett. I agree. I read it a couple years ago. That gives a lot of info on the English way of life in the 1600s. Yeah, yeah, that actually is a really, really good book. I read it probably like 5 years ago.
The great European empires in general were great. If you're an Anglo-American, you're going to lean towards England. And England was good for law. They were real good about that, real good for invention. When it came to power and expansion, it was the Spanish. The Spanish Empire was the shit, too. Now, they weren't always at the same levels over time. Over time, Spanish Empire couldn't hold together. But really, man, Spain, man, fucking almost all of Central and South America. They got that and ran it okay. Did well with it. You can go back and reinterpret things, but in general, they improved the area as time went on.
They're all playing with the emojis now, though.
They're playing with emojis now?
Yeah, like the Where Is That Raccoon?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the one that's you.
Oh, yeah,
what am
I doing here?
You probably can't. You just like with your little muscle arms and stuff like that. Yeah. There's the Smell of Sanctity one.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to this shit. Because we were only on the first victim. So, yeah, the first victim, 71-year-old woman, raped and murdered, found on the side of the road in September of 1986. Now, the second victim was a 25-year-old woman named Park Hyun-suk. Now, she was coming home after she had a meeting with a prospective marriage partner, because that was how they did that shit back then. And this was October 20th, 1986, and it was about 10 o'clock at night. And she, like most of the victims, she had just gotten off the bus, because she was coming back from another town. And she kind of walked down the road, you know, no one was around, like toward her house, and she got attacked. So her body was found 3 days later in the afternoon. In a canal, she had been raped and also strangled. Now, some of them were strangled by hand, and some of them were ligature strangulation.
How old was she? 25.
Go. 25. The third victim was named Kwon Jung Bon. She was also 25, and she was a housewife. Now, this was probably like a little over a month later. This was happening like in pretty quick succession. December 12th, 1986. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. She was actually attacked and murdered in front of her house. So not even, like, going to the bus. So her body was found much later, down an embankment. She had been gagged and strangled using her stockings, which was something of a signature of the killer, like, going forward. He would use a lot of the victim's own clothing to strangle them and restrain them.
When they found her, the gag was still in her mouth?
Yeah. Yeah, and she was, like, tied up with her stockings and had been raped. All of the victims were raped, as far as I
know. Letting people know what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fourth victim was a 23-year-old woman named Lee Ki-suk, and she was also coming home after meeting a prospective marriage partner. A lot of that going around back then. And she was actually taken only 2 days after the previous one. But I think, like, the previous one's body wasn't found until several months later. But she was attacked, like, 2 days afterward. And it was about the same time of night. It was also 11 p.m. Again, she had gotten off the bus because she had come back from another town. And her body was found a few days later in some rice fields. And she had been, tied, her hands tied behind her back, and she had been strangled. Also, she had been raped with an umbrella. This was another thing that some of the victims would have going forward.
Which
is? The killer, I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Where he would, like, insert things.
He's an insertion freak.
Yeah, like he did it to a few of them. But yeah, but this was the first one that he did it on. As maybe far he couldn't as I know, get it was up. An umbrella. Yeah, maybe so. I'm
maybe
not really
get
sure.
It up. Yeah.
Not really sure.
Just trying to violate her in some way.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, this dude, what the fuck, man? This is some fucked up shit. So the next victim, victim number 5, was a 19-year-old high school student whose name was Hong Jin Young. And she was coming home from school. It was about 8:30 p.m., so again, she was getting off the bus. This was January 10th, 1987. She was actually found the following day, also in a rice field or rice paddy or whatever. And she had, her hands were also tied behind her back. She'd been gagged with socks and also raped and strangled. The next victim was Park Eun-joo. She was a victim number 6, 29 years old, also a housewife. She was actually, her husband was at work, I guess, like down the road a little way. And it was going to rain, and he'd forgotten his umbrella. So she was taking him his umbrella. And on the way there, she was attacked. Her body was found 7 days after she disappeared. So she disappeared on May 2nd, 1987. Her body was found on the 9th. And she had also been raped and strangled. The seventh victim was also a housewife. She was 54 years old. Her name was An Gi-soon. And she was coming home, this was September 7th, 1987, about 11 o'clock at night. And again, she had gotten off the bus and then got attacked. So her body was found in a canal on September 8th in the morning. Now, she'd been tied up. She'd been gagged with socks and a handkerchief. She'd been strangled and raped. And also, the killer had inserted peach slices into her vagina. I've heard peach slices, and I've also heard a whole peach. Not that it really makes that much of a difference, but I'm just saying sources differ on that. So, yeah. So, again,
that was supposed to be a compliment. This is some good shit here. That's sweet as hell.
That's, like, fucking weird, man.
Yeah.
That's so fucking weird.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd heard in other cases where they're putting rocks and gravel and shit. It's like an insult. That's weird. So I was thinking that might be the opposite.
Maybe.
I'm just might have like, been some kind of weird, perverse compliment.
Gee, thanks.
This is some good pussy. Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. But hey, these dudes are weird, man.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah,
you could say are weird. That. Murder Hornet said, somewhere in Asia, they killed a girl farmer. They stuck the handle inside her, then kicked it in. Said it went all the way to her organs. Like, Jesus Christ. Like a pickaxe handle.
Okay.
Fuck's sake. Thank you very much, Aaron, for the tip jar. Happy Wednesday.
Thank you very much,
Thank Aaron. You so much. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome.
We could use every bit of it. Gotta pay bills around here.
Pay bills and buy stuff for the other channel.
Yeah. A camera. Yep. I wanted to get some RGBs, too. Want to get some more RGBs.
Yeah, we need some more lights. RGB lights, yeah.
Yeah, I think I want me to buy those two.
Yeah, okay.
Set of two. Okay.
All right. Murder Hornet said, why serial killers put weird shit in? Why do they do anything they do? I mean, because they're fucked up.
They're outside in the wild running out of things to do, and the woman's probably either dead or semi-conscious, and he just wants to put something in there to kind of, like I said, insult her. It's they're not nice, dude. That's not the idea.
You know I mean, I guess it's just like another like degradation.
It's a way of degrade. Yeah. I mean, even dudes like BTK, he'd be torturing some girl, and he's thinking he's like some kind of gentleman bandit and giving him some
water.
Yeah,
he really did think that.
He thought he was a nice guy.
Yeah, he really did think that.
And then he'd tell him, look, I got this problem. I have to kill you now. No, it's going to be okay. It's going to be. And then he'd kill him. Man, it's just, I really can't conceive
You
of
should
it.
Read that book that Sophie sent me. That's like all of his letters and stuff like that. Yeah. That dude.
Yeah.
That wigged me out. Like, the way that dude thinks. It's just.
Yeah.
It's out there.
And then there were other guys that are just sexual sadists. You know, some of fucking, what's his name? Bundy was like that. And then after they were dead, he was doing stuff to the bodies. Just increasing the sadism. People don't realize the weird shit that he would do. He'd like to take a head home with him, put it in the refrigerator, and use that as a toy.
Yeah.
For days and days. Yeah. Put her head up on a damn mantle.
Yeah, think about that next time somebody talks about Ted Bundy being the hottest serial killer.
Yeah, no, he was like, gross, man. Yeah, he was a necrophile.
He was fucking gross as hell.
Yeah. I mean, people don't realize that he was a necrophiliac.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow that doesn't really get brought up all that much. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, see, that's the thing. If you're kind of like, you know, sort of attractive, I guess, by conventional standards, then you get away with a lot more.
Yeah, they forget to mention certain
things. They forget
things.
To mention that it's like, hey, he used to fuck, like, gross decomposed yeah. severed heads.
I think he took a 13-year-old girl to an abandoned pig slaughterhouse, raped her, and then slit her throat like a pig.
Yeah.
And left her there in a slaughterhouse floor. Now, he said he didn't do it, but he did it.
Yeah, for some reason, it's like they'll yeah. admit to, like, everything else, but it's right. like, usually if it's underage girls, oh, that wasn't
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that wasn't me. I didn't do that one.
I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, it was him.
You might as well just admit it.
Yeah.
Dude.
It was him.
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah. He was a disgusting scumbag. But, yeah, I don't care what he looks like. He's a disgusting scumbag. And I don't personally think he was that attractive anyway. But, I mean, you know, by serial killer standards, I guess he was okay looking, but because that's only because the rest of them were so fucked up looking. So yeah. So victim number 8 was a 14-year-old girl. Now, her name was Park Sang-hee, and this was actually a little bit of a standout in the series because she was actually not on, she wasn't outside. She wasn't like walking over the bus or school or anything like that. She was actually asleep in her room in the middle of the night, and the killer broke into the house, essentially, and raped and murdered her in her bedroom. So the thing about it was that, I guess the house, because I saw in the documentary they showed the house, they showed kind of police footage of it, and there was a wall around the house that, you know, was probably about 8-9 feet tall, I want to say. So the killer would have had to, like, climb over that. But they're like, once they did that, I heard some of the sources said, oh, well, a door was open and he just went in. But then on the documentary, they said, well, a traditional Korean house at the time would have had, like, the doors that just slid open and shut, and then there would be, like, paper. So you could essentially just, like, punch through the paper and, like, undo the latch and get in. So I'm not sure which of the, I mean, you know, like I said, it doesn't really matter. He did get into the house and killed that little girl. But you know, but the wall around the house, that'll kind of come into play, like, a little bit later on. But yeah, because, I saw, like, footage of what the house looked like, and it was kind of just like a wall around it. But it wasn't locked or anything, so once you got over the wall, you could just get in there pretty easily. So yeah, so, again, this was kind of a slightly different MO, even though she was left the same way, she was still strangled with her clothes and stuff like that. But he actually, like, had gotten bolder at this point, because he'd actually broken into a house and raped and murdered a little girl in her bed rather than, like, outside. Now, that was number 8. So then the 9th victim was another 14-year-old girl named Kim Mi-jung, and she was a middle school student. And she was coming home from school on November 15th, 1990, about 6:30 in the evening. A very foggy day it was. And she was attacked on her way back home. So her body was found the following day on a hill. Her hands and feet were tied. She'd been gagged with her bra. She'd also been strangled and raped. And she also had things inserted into her vagina, including a ballpoint pen, a fork, a spoon, and a razor blade. Hmm. So, great.
That was post-mortem? Probably.
I don't know, actually, because I was thinking about that, too, like, when I was making the notes, because I couldn't really see, like, anything that said that it was, if it was pre or post-mortem.
Probably post-mortem, because people are fucking kicking around and thrashing and fighting.
Yeah, you
too. Too hard. Yeah, probably.
First Power 100 said Ted Bundy's last murder victim was 12, and she wasn't even Bundy's youngest victim. The youngest one was, I believe, 9. Yeah, so not only that, not only was a necrophile, but he also killed little kids, even though he denied it.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's a fucking scumbag. But, you know. And then the 10th victim was a 69-year-old woman named Kwon Soon Sang. And she was coming home at 9 p.m. on April 3rd, 1991. Again, getting off the bus. And she was attacked by the killer at that point. She was found the next day and had been raped and strangled. Now, these are kind of like the 10... canonical murders that they know were the same guy. So these serial murders were kind of, as I said, you know, the span of time that this was going on from 1986 to 1991, these weren't I mean, serial killing wasn't really a thing, like, in South Korea. They hadn't really seen anything like this.
It's not a big country, and it doesn't have a huge population, so statistically, it's not going to happen as much there. That's why, you know, the cops weren't as familiar with it, you know?
Yeah. At first, I kind of feel like they were just trying to say, oh, they're just unrelated, but I'm like, well, you know. They didn't really get on the serial killer. Well, they didn't have, like, the serial killer, you know, heyday that we had,
yeah,
like, in the 70s, like, the late 60s and 70s, and 80s to, like, a lesser extent.
It's also not the correct environment to produce large amounts of serial killers. It's just, it's a different kind of society. It's a lot more chilled out, more traditional, and predictable. The expectations of men are a lot different. So, the pressures that you need aren't really there. Statistics have a lot to do with it, though, too. Like, I think Japan also, very low incidence of violence.
Yeah, they have a very,
very
low.
Very low. Korea's similar, you know.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, some fucked up shit has happened in Japan, because I wrote about a couple cases, but it's very, very uncommon.
Yeah, even their organized criminals are not really a big deal by Western standards, you know what I mean? Like, people talk about the Yakuza, all they know about the Yakuza is what they saw in some Hollywood movie. You can go on YouTube and see American guys hanging out with the Yakuza, and they're just regular guys. They're not doing, say, what Mexican mob does. That's not how they make a living. They have offices and shit. They do things like handle legal gambling debts and shit. Try to collect debts. They're kind of more like collection agents. They do run brothels. But they're just running brothels. Other people run brothels too. Some of them will carry guns, but very rarely do they ever shoot or kill anybody. Because they're dealing with people that will pay up the money eventually, you know. So they don't, the Japanese public doesn't require the heavy hand that people in the American or even Mexican public would require. In other words, you know, if you're a Mexican gangster and you owe a bunch of money and, you know, and you don't want to pay, it's going to take more force to get you to pay, you know. They're the police for the criminals is what organized crime is about, really. And they're trying to sell things. This shit doesn't really exist. The savagery of the American continent doesn't exist in Korea and Japan, even in China. It's just not there. I hear Europeans say things that's absolutely ludicrous by American continent standards. You know, a European government could never control South or Central America ever, and barely control the United States. Get your shit killed doing what European governments do. Just wouldn't work here. Very unruly.
Chantelle Lay said Bundy was nasty. I wish they talked more about that. Yeah, it's really
real nasty.
Yeah, it really seems like they do kind of gloss over, yeah, like all the real gross shit he did. Just because, like I said, because by serial killer standards, he was okay looking, I suppose. First Power 100 says, and I'm going to get to this because he says, Yoo Young-chul is still South Korea's worst serial killer. I heard about him when I was researching this case, and I said, oh, we should do a show about this motherfucker,
we
too.
Can do it.
Because he was also a cannibal.
Put it on a list.
And he's,
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, and he's, you don't really hear a lot about him
in
the West. Yeah, I thought about it earlier because I was like, yeah, we should probably do a show about that dude as well. Good. Because there's not a lot of other stuff out there about him. I think I saw one documentary, like a 20-25 minute one that somebody had done. What's up, Pook? Why are you scratching on my chair? So yeah, this was kind of like the first, as far as I know, this was like the first serial killing spree, like, in Korea, at least that they know of, like, the, you know, the, a series of crimes with the same MO, pretty much. So, like I said, the first crime in the series, which happened in 1986, which was the older lady, like in her 70s, that they initially thought was hit and run or whatever, and then when the next victim that happened like about a month later was younger, I think initially, up until probably like the third or fourth murder, I think they thought these weren't related, you know what I mean? Because they didn't really have the experience with it.
Yeah.
Now, once they finally did figure out that this was probably the same motherfucker doing all this, they did actually kind of mobilize, you know, a record number of police officers to investigate the crime. Prior to that, there had really only been three dudes working on the murders. I should say, too, that at the around the time of the first murders in the series, there was, in Korea, there was the, you know, the Asia Games. It was just kind of like the big, you know, like the Asian Olympics or whatever. And that was going on in Seoul. So a lot of police officers had been deployed to Seoul, like, to help out with that. Because, you know, North Korea had been making threats against it, and they were going to blow it up and all this other kind of crap. So they had all of the cops there, kind of. So they didn't really have a lot of cops out in these, like, little wilderness kind of towns, you know what I mean? So they only had three dudes on it at first. But once they started taking it seriously, they had a lot more dudes. So eventually, as the murders went on and the public started freaking out, I mean, as they would, because they're like, why isn't the police doing anything? Why can't you catch this guy? They did end up with over 21,000 suspects who they looked at and interviewed. They also fingerprinted more than 40,000 people. And they took some DNA samples and hair samples, even though at the time they didn't really have a good way of testing them. Really, all they could do was fingerprints and blood typing. You know what I mean? That was pretty much all they did. They didn't really have the technology to do DNA in Korea in the late 1980s. So what they tried to do, once they determined that this guy was striking in pretty much a 4-mile radius around this town, this little town, they had all the cops go out, and they'd go out in pairs, and they'd only be like 300 feet apart, and they're just like kind of combing the area looking for the dude. But, you know, they never did find him. And the next time that he killed somebody, he happened to kind of filter through the net and get somewhere where the cops weren't. Also, they tried to like set traps for them and shit like that, because there had been a rumor started going around. It wasn't entirely accurate, but I guess I know where they got the idea from. The rumor was that the killer was only targeting women that were wearing red, and that he only struck when it was raining out. And I think they did actually, if you see the Bong Joon-ho movie, Memories of Murder, I think that's kind of like a big plot point. Like the red clothes and the rain and everything like that. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think it was always raining, like, and I don't think all the women had red on. But I think enough of them did that people made that association, you know what I mean? So what they would do was they would have, like, female police officers, and they would put red clothes on and, like, walk around by themselves at night, like, hoping to bait the guy into attacking them, but he never did. Like, it never worked. And they did that, and I guess I understand, like, how the townsfolk were getting a little hoping some superstition could help them out, because they built a, like, a scarecrow, essentially, that they put, like, red clothes on, and it said something on it, like, what did it say? It said something, it was like a threat, like, to the guy. So they were hoping it would, like, frighten him away. It was like some kind of, like, magic or something. Now, interestingly, a couple people did see who they thought was the killer. Like, they had this, the bus driver and the conductor on the bus. They did see a guy get on the bus, like, after, like, not too long after the seventh victim had been murdered, like, in 1988. And, so the bus driver, so they actually were able to, they did, like, a famous, you know, like, a composite sketch of him. And there also had been several women who had been raped but not murdered, and they had also given the police a description of this dude. So the description at the time, they said he was a very slender man, probably for that time, average height, about 5'5", 5'6". They said he was in his early to mid-20s, they were pretty sure. Had short hair, like that was kind of like a sporty cut, what they would call it. And a sharp nose. A lot of them said that.
I don't know what that is for a Korean standard.
I don't know what that is either, but yeah. That was something that a lot of them said, the witnesses.
They say that Caucasians have long noses, which I don't really understand that either. Or tall noses, that's what they call it. Tall nose. Are they talking about this way or this way? I don't know.
I would think they were talking about like that
way. Yeah, I would think so too. Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't know. I don't know what that means.
That's just the way they describe it. Yeah. I had some Korean guy one time I went to Seoul. We had to go deliver some paperwork. We were on some special fucking detail. It was legal paperwork because some shit that fucking went down in the unit. And me and the NCO had to go to this fucking... It was like a joint headquarters where American Army and the Korean Army fucking have the same offices. As I was walking in there, a Korean NCO, he was an E5, a sergeant, comes right up to me and he fucking marches right up to me and fucking stops and fucking puts his face right in my fucking face. And I'm like, what the fuck is this all about? And then he goes, and he points at my eye like that. And he goes, blue. And I went, no, green. And he had never seen colored eyes, just brown.
Yeah, I guess they wouldn't.
And he goes back and looking at it, and he's looking at it, and all of a sudden I can see that he starts to dry heave, almost like to throw up. And I go, it's all right, man, it's all right, because it had disturbed him so much.
Weird.
And then he shook it off.
So he'd really never seen anyone with blue or green
No,
eyes.
And it almost caused him to throw up.
That seems like a weird thing that would make you throw up.
Yeah. He had never seen it. He'd never seen it firsthand. I think he was. I don't think he worked there. I think he was just visiting there. He had heard. He had seen it only in fit photos. And then he shook it off. He started spitting. Like, it's all right, man. It's all right. He's like, yeah, yeah. It's all right. And then he's like, it's okay. It doesn't hurt. You see, you know, he wanted to.
Ask, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, he wanted. Does it hurt? No, it's okay. You know, it's okay. Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Weird. That was in the. It was in the very early 90s. They're probably not like that now.
I would imagine not.
Yeah.
That seems very...
No, I understood it. You know what I mean? They're very homogeneous. They don't see people of other races.
Still, though.
By Western standards, they'd be racist. Wouldn't let you into restaurants and stuff. But you just kind of have to forgive them there. They don't know what they're talking about. They're scared.
Well, like I said, now I mean, nowadays, in a westernized country, if you want to call it that, like with the internet and everything like that, I don't think there's any excuse anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but this is in the Western country. It's Korea.
Well, no, I know, but I'm talking westernized just in the sense of you know, having the internet and having access to the same movies and shit like that that everybody else does, which they do.
Well, you can go on YouTube and go look at channels like Korean Girls React or Koreans React, and fucking they got basically internet celebrities and low-level celebrities reacting to Western things and shit, and they just react to the way Western girls dress. They like it, but they say like, oh, you could never. We could never dress like that. And what they're talking about is exposing arms or exposed backs on dresses. Hmm. That's how vanilla they are. And then they see a girl who's like curvy with like big boobs and a nice butt, and they cannot believe that a person could be built like that. like wow, you know, the girls are like, man, I wish I had that. You know, they were like, man, that'd be nice. And they're making jokes about it and shit, you know. And like, how's that possible? You know, and actually, I think at the time, you know, they were talking, it was a Latina girl who was, you know, double E, you know, double G top and fucking just hourglass shape, you know, with a nice booty, and that would just blow their fucking minds. And the guys thought it was too big. The Korean guys were like, that's too big. Another guy goes, yeah, but that's, you know, that has a certain look to that, you know what I mean? So some guys kind of liked it, but the girls liked it better than the guys.
Isn't that always the way?
Girls recognized hyperfemininity. They liked it, yeah. The guys, I think they were just, oh, no.
She might beat me up.
Maybe it
I'm
might,
just kidding.
Might be more like, I may not be man enough for that. That's probably what, you know, like, she's going to be going for another guy.
It's like, man, that's some Jessica Rabbit shit.
Yeah, right? Jessica Rabbit, right. And that's the way she was built, Jessica Rabbit.
So they did have a description of this guy. Like I said, they had a composite sketch. A couple of the women that had survived sexual assaults also said that he had soft hands, which I guess in this rural community would kind of be a big deal because it wasn't somebody that like worked in a farm or something like that. So that was another thing that a couple of them pointed out. Now, here's where the cops made kind of a fuck up that, impacted the case quite greatly. They mistakenly, as it turned out, they didn't actually know they were mistaken until much later, but they mistakenly said that the suspect had type B blood. Mm-hmm. As I said later on, when they actually caught the real guy that did it, turned out that he didn't have type B blood, he had type O blood. but you know. So yeah. Now, as I mentioned before, because there was so much pressure on the police to solve this case, there was a horrible miscarriage of justice that occurred after the 8th murder, which, if you remember, was the one with the 14-year-old girl that was murdered in her bed, like in her house. And what ended up happening was that the cops hauled in a then 22-year-old man named Yoon Sung Hyo, in 1989. And he was only arrested for that one murder, but they were kind of like implying that he had killed the other women as well. Now, here's the thing. What they argued, I'm not sure entirely like how he specifically came to the attention of the police. They were kind of like going through pretty much everybody that lived in that area, because like I said, it wasn't a huge, you know, it wasn't a huge population. So they were kind of like interviewing everybody. What ended up happening was that at that particular crime scene, they found some pubic hairs and like some other hairs. And these hairs had traces of titanium. And because Yoon worked as a welder and also had similar like titanium, you know, in his hair fibers, that was one thing that they used against him. And basically they also had, they hauled him in. This poor guy is, he wasn't super educated. He grew up very poor. We'll get into this in a little bit. But he was disabled. Like, he had had polio when he was 3. And on the interview, like on the documentary, when he was talking about it, he said, yeah, it's like, you know, rich people back then, when he was 3 years old, you know, could afford to get vaccinated, but I was poor, so I couldn't get vaccinated. So he got polio when he was 3, and it essentially, like, crippled him for life. So he's on the documentary, which was made in 2020 or 2021, and he still walks. You know, he can walk, but, you know, kind of not all that great. So they hauled him in, and they kept him in custody for 3 days. They did not let him sleep. They did not give him any food. And when he wouldn't, allegedly, when he wouldn't tell them that he was the killer, they basically just started, like, kicking the shit out of him. And they would also kind of, like, make him, you know, kind of, like, squat up and down like that, which he couldn't really do because, like I said, he's crippled. I mean, he had polio. Like, his legs are all like that. You know what I mean? Like, if he, like I said, he can walk, but... You know,
and they had surviving witnesses by this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't report that the dude had been crippled by polio.
Well, see, that's what's dumb. It's like, yeah, you'd think that that would be, because it's very obvious. Like, right. If you see him walk, it's very obvious that he had had polio, like, when he was a kid. It's very obvious, like, the way he walks and the way his legs are configured.
Cops are just desperate to get an arrest.
That's what they were.
I got him.
And what they used, they used his disability to say, oh, well, because he's disabled, he's mad at women.
He couldn't get laid.
Because they wouldn't, because he can't get laid.
Yeah.
So he decided he was just going to go take it. And they beat the shit out of this poor guy. And, you know, like I said,
would have definitely said, no, he was crippled.
You'd think that that would be one of the first things you would notice.
Yeah, right, yeah. Fucking dumbasses.
Right, but like you said, they were so desperate.
They knew, they had to have known.
I'm sure they did.
They had to have known.
So, the thing about,
about
it, too, and like I said, they specifically arrested him for the one murder that, you know, that happened inside the girl's house, right? Yeah. But then they kind of implied, yeah, he did the other ones, too. Like, we caught the serial killer. But remember how I said before how to get into that girl's house, you would have had to climb over, like, it looked like about an 8-foot wall. Like I said, I saw the police footage of the house where it happened.
Cripple guy
and he's like, I can't climb that wall. He's like, you know what I mean? He's like, it would have been impossible. You know, and he's like, and they're sitting there going, yeah, you did climb that wall. And he's just like, I didn't climb that fucking wall. But see, the thing about it was that they kept him in custody so long. Like I said, they kept him awake for 3 days straight. They didn't give him any food. They just kicked the shit out of him. They tortured him, essentially, until finally he just gave up and said, fine, I did it. So they do actually have, and they saw this, I saw this on the documentary too, where they had, you know, footage of him, and he was only 22 at the time. He had like pimples and everything like that. Poor guy. And he, you know, comes out and is like, yeah, I was just, walking home and, you know, I had been at work and people were bullying me and I was mad and I just passed this house and I didn't intend to kill anybody, but then I just went in there and did it. And you could tell he was just kind of like repeating back what they wanted him to say. Yeah. He just gave up, you know what I mean? He didn't know. He said he didn't really know what to do. And he said now, like, you know, in 2020 or 2021, whenever they were interviewing him for this thing, he's like, you know, I wasn't very educated. I was, like, really fucked up. I was out of it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have anybody to turn to. Because aside from this poor dude having polio when he was a kid, also his mom died in a car accident when he was a little kid. And then his dad was a gambling addict and abandoned him when he was little. And he ended up having to go live with, like, a neighbor who, like, put him to work, like, when he was a little kid. And he was, like, super, super poor. So it's, like, most of the time he's, like, we didn't even, like, we ate maybe once a day if we were lucky. And that's, like, about it. And now, like, he's in his 20s working as a welder. And now suddenly he's a serial killer. And it's just, like, I'm, like, this poor fucking dude, man. Just life shitting on him.
In Korean society, they're looking at him like, yeah, he doesn't have a family, no real means of support. He did it. He's got to be something wrong with him. Yeah, I can understand kind of why the cops would think that he was a prime suspect, because he would be unusual by Korean society. That's an unusual situation for them. So they're gonna think poorly of him. That's the way they think.
Yeah, which is
they're
fucked up.
Go like, oh,
well,
okay.
It's just kind of like,
and then. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, it's fucked up. Hopefully they gave him some kind of compensation.
They did.
Yeah, all right.
But, yeah, we'll get to that.
So they cleared his name and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good.
We'll get to that. I mean, it took a while. I'm not going to lie. But, and like I said, he seems like a lovely man.
Yeah.
And you'd think that he'd be pissed and bitter. I fucking would be, that's for sure. But he seems pretty chill.
Well, they didn't send him to fucking San Quentin. Korean prison, fucking probably full of a bunch of cream puffs, really. Shit, doesn't take much to go to fucking prison in Korea. You know,
but I don't know.
They're like, not going to be real hardened criminals.
Well, the thing about it, one thing that he said that, well, the one thing that he said that,
yeah,
that struck me, I thought this was kind of funny. He has, you know, when they went in his house, he had like two clocks right next to each other. And he's like, oh, I always have two clocks because we weren't allowed to have clocks in prison. If you had a clock, you get punished if they found you with one. And he's like, I don't know. But he's like, so I always wanted two. But, well, the thing about it was he was in prison for, you know, I think it was 21 years or something like that. And he's like, by the time he got out, he didn't have any idea. Like, the world had completely changed.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just had no idea, like, how to do anything. And he didn't have any family or anything. Like, he had, luckily, he befriended one of his prison guards.
Yeah.
Like, they became really close friends, and that dude, like, helped him out a lot because he was on the documentary, too. So they, you know, became friends, and he helped him out.
Did the guard know that he didn't do it?
Well, the guard said, he's like, when the guy came to prison, he's like, you know, it's pretty common, you know, for everybody, people in prisons to be like, oh, I didn't do it or anything. But he's like, usually they chill out on that after a while. Yeah, I totally did that. But he's like, this guy, he's like, just vehemently protests his innocence the whole entire time. And he's like, and I'd never met anybody like that, even though, you know, I'd been in the business for like 30 years or whatever. And he's like, and after a while, he's like, I didn't believe him at first. I thought he was just like bullshitting like all the other ones did. But after a while, he's like, he started to know that. That he hadn't done it. And the thing about it too was that he also befriended this woman who was like a nun, and she worked with prisoners.
Yeah.
And she said, I knew him for 6 months and I immediately knew that he couldn't have done what they said that he did. They're just like, she's like, he's
definitely not gonna climb a fucking 8-foot wall.
Well, yeah, that too. And it's just, that's so dumb. I mean, that should have discounted him like immediately, because like I said, if you saw him walk, there's no way. I'm like, a healthy person would have had a hard time climbing that wall.
Well, yeah, we used to do it fucking in confidence course in the fucking basic training in the army. You gotta fucking take a running fucking leap, jump, especially if you're as short as my ass, and fucking reach up and just get one hand on it, ooh, and then hook the other one in and then pull yourself up, and then you kind of run it with your feet to get up on it. And if there's any hesitation, if you slow down at all, you won't have the momentum. But no, a dude with polio all bent up, you couldn't do it.
No, there's no way.
A healthy fucking 19-year-old has a problem doing it.
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, much less a guy who's, like I said, his legs are kind of like out like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. And they said whoever broke into that house had to have climbed over that wall. Because that was the only way you could get in there. So here's the thing. The poor guy, you know, is essentially tortured into confessing. You know, that's about the long and short of it. And so they're like, we got him. We did it. We solved it. You're welcome. So, you know, they put him in jail. However, several months later, there were two more murders of the same thing.
Now, how does that not exonerate the guy? They said, well, this is a different killer.
You're going to love this.
Yeah.
You're going to love this. Yeah, so remember, because I said he was caught, he was put in prison for the eighth crime. And remember, there were two more after that.
Yeah.
So they put him in jail, and then the ninth and tenth murders happened. And at this point, everybody's freaking out, being like, hey, you didn't catch the killer, what the fuck? And at this point, the cop said, oh, no, no, he's still the killer, it's just that he's not the serial killer, but he did kill that little girl in the house. It was a copycat.
Oh, they're saying he just did that one.
That okay, he just did that one, but that he's not the... Oh, but the serial killer is still out there. So that was, like, pretty much the only way they could save face.
Yeah.
Was just by saying, oh, well, he's still a killer. We didn't fuck up, we promise.
Son of a bitch. They did this shit in a fucking country with a low crime rate.
Yeah.
Fucking assholes. Fucking...
And I mean, in this... seriously. But, yeah, everyone in the documentary was very, very mad at the cops at the time period because they're like, they just really whiffed this one big time. You know, probably on purpose just because they were being that way. But yeah, so, and, well, I mean, it was easy to say that the one that happened inside the house, that maybe that was a different killer or a copycat because the MO was different. I mean, all of the other women had been attacked, you know, out on the road, like while they were getting off the bus or whatever. Or outside their house. So it was easy to argue that that was a different dude, you know what I mean? But they found out later that it wasn't. It was the same guy. So yeah. So this poor motherfucker, Yoon, he ended up serving more than two decades in prison. So he was in prison for like 21 years.
Damn.
Now he got released on parole in 2009, but was still considered guilty and ended up having to move to a different village because everyone's still kind of, you know, there was that pall of, hanging over him. Now, it does get better later on, but like I said, it took a while. Meanwhile, in September of 1989, the real killer, who we'll find out about in a little bit, actually broke into someone's house wearing gloves and with a bunch of weapons. Now, he didn't hurt anybody this time. The landlord found him and reported him to the cops, and the cops came and arrested him. Now, in February of 1990... he got sentenced to a year and a half for robbery and violence, so he goes to prison. And at the first trial, he filed an appeal saying, oh, I wasn't breaking into that house. Somebody was chasing me, and I just ran in there to get away from them.
Yeah.
Is that the lamest fucking...
Somebody else made me do it.
Is that the lamest fucking excuse you've ever heard?
The monster made me do it.
Right. Yeah, I was
the guy you're looking for.
I was being chased by a Sasquatch, you see, and this was the closest house, and I didn't mean for it. Yeah,
he's saying the guy you're looking for made me do this.
Right, pretty much. Yeah, but yeah. So this, like I said, now this they found out later was the real killer, but they didn't know he was the killer at this time because this was 1989. So he actually did. I don't think that excuse worked, but they actually did give him a suspended sentence. So he got released in April of 1990. Now, remember how I said that they had gone through, like, 21,000 suspects or something like that? I have heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but some sources did state that at least four people that were suspected of the crime at one point or another ended up committing suicide in the 1990s because of the way they had been treated by the police, because of abuses and things like that. And like I said, this was apparently a very common thing in Korea at the time, police brutality, that is. And during this time period, as I said, there was a lot of news footage of, you know, protests, mass protests against the police for beating the shit out of people and, trying to draw attention to, like, human rights violations and things like that. So the case kind of went into stagnation a little bit after that, because, like I said, it wasn't solved at the time. That guy was in prison, but, you know, they were kind of like, oh, well, he just did the one, but they don't know about the other ones. So when the Bong Joon-ho movie Memories of Murder came out in 2003, it actually kind of renewed interest in the serial murders. And also there was another murder that happened in Hwaseong in 2004, like a schoolgirl, or she was like a college student, I think, that was murdered. And so they thought, oh, maybe this is the same killer or something. It wasn't, but they thought that it was the same killer, maybe. And then it kind of got renewed interest again, like in 2006, because, again, the statute of limitations, which Korea had at the time, was going to expire. So they're like, well, shit, if we were going to catch this person, we better catch him now, because otherwise, after 2006, we won't be able to convict them. So, like I said, at the time, there was a 15-year statute of limitations for first-degree murder. In 2007, they actually increased it to 25 years. And then in 2015, they lifted it entirely. Partially in response to this particular case, but it wasn't retroactive. Like, you couldn't go back and say, oh, well, you know what I mean? Like, but they don't have that anymore. They don't have a statute of limitations on first-degree murder anymore. It was lifted in 2015. So what ends up happening with this motherfucker, the real killer, whose name is, holy shit, I just forgot what it was. It's Lee Chun-jae. Lee Chun-jae. That's the guy's name. I knew his first name, but I couldn't remember his last name. So that's the real killer they discovered later on. What ended up happening and how they kind of, how it came about that that he got fingered for this stuff, or got caught for this stuff, rather, because that sounded kind of dirty. 2 years after the last of the Hwaseong murders, which was 1991, Lee's wife, he was married, took off and left him. So, as kind of retaliation for this, I guess, in January of 1994, he actually invited his wife's sister, so his sister-in-law, who at the time was 18, over to his house, and then he drugged her, raped her, and murdered her. His wife's sister. So then he hides her body, like, in this garage with a tarp over it. And then he goes to his father-in-law's house and says, oh, I'll help you look for your missing daughter. Even though he had fucking raped and killed her, right? So, interestingly, this, when they found the body, it was done, but like, just like the Hwaseong, the other Hwaseong victims. Like, he had covered her head in a plastic bag and her jeans. Like, so he used clothes to, you know, tie them up and stuff. And he had tied her hands together with her underwear and had tied other parts of her body with, like, stockings and things like that. So they didn't find her body for 2 days. But they pretty much suspected Lee immediately, so he got arrested. Also, he kept walking around town asking people, how long is the sentence for rape and murder? Which, that seems a little suspicious. So, yeah, but he did get arrested in 1994 for the murder of his sister-in-law. But like I said, they didn't know that he was the serial killer at that time, because this was 1994. So he said at first that he didn't kill her, but he tried to pull the police brutality thing. Oh, they beat the confession out of me. That's what he said. But, you know, he did get convicted of the crime and was sentenced to death. And then in 1995, the court went over his case, like, they did a review of it, and they reduced his sentence to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 20 years. Now, much later, so he was in prison for murdering his sister-in-law. But then much later, for whatever reason, just in the documentary, they just said it was like an anonymous tip that sent him and said, hey, why don't you look into this Lee Chun-jae dude, like, for the Hwaseong serial murders, because the MO of, like, how he killed the sister-in-law was kind of similar, and it was only, like, a couple years after the last of the Hwaseong murders. So they started looking into him, and they took some DNA, and they still had some DNA saved up from the Hwaseong case that they had kept around, even though they didn't really have a way of analyzing it at the time. And they compared them, and what do you know? This motherfucker's DNA matched the DNA in at least three of the Hwaseong serial murder cases. So in September of 2019, The police came out and announced to the public that Lee had been identified as a suspect in this, in the series of murders. He was identified, like I said, after DNA from the underwear of the victims was, like, matched with his. And like I said, it took a while for people to kind of get over because his blood type was not B, it was O. But they determined that they had actually mistakenly thought that the killer had type B blood back in the 80s, you know what I mean? So, luckily, when they discovered that this was the dude that they were looking for all this time, he was already in prison for the sister-in-law murder. He's actually in prison in Busan, which, you know, like Train to Busan, that zombie movie, which is very good if you haven't seen it. So he's already in there. Now, at first, when they asked him about the serial killing cases, he denied that, too. But eventually, when they presented him with all of the DNA evidence that they had, said, look, we found your DNA on a bunch of the victims. And then he basically said something to the cops that was, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like, oh, you finally found me, or something to that effect. So after that, I guess he knew that they had his number. So he came out and confessed. Here's the thing. He not only confessed to killing all 10 of the canonical Hwaseong victims, he also confessed to killing 4 more victims that the cops didn't know about, or that didn't know were part of the same series because they were, like, in a different town. Yeah. And the crimes that he committed, that he confessed to, like, also included the one that poor Yoon was convicted of. So, yeah. So 3 of the crimes had actually happened in Hwaseong, but hadn't been, like, considered part of the same series, I guess, because they were different. And then the other ones happened in, like, somewhere else, like, in another town. But they didn't know that those were related. But, yeah, so he had actually confessed to killing 14 people, not just 10. He also said that he had committed more than 30 rapes and attempted rapes. So there's that. So, yeah, 14, at least 14 murders, at least 30 rapes. So great. So in November of 2019, the cops came out and said that they had pretty much, they didn't want to say, yeah, he definitely did it, but they said, we're pretty sure he was responsible for all 10 of the serial murders, as well as 4 more that he confessed to that they didn't know were part of the same series. So you know what I mean. The police at the time speculated that he was introverted and had weak self-esteem. But he really liked being in the military, but then when he got out, he was, like, bored and frustrated, so decided to start raping and murdering people, as one does.
Just as his hobby, huh?
I guess so.
I ain't buying it. I think it goes back before his time in the military.
Maybe, yeah. We'll talk a little bit about, like his early life and stuff like that, too. But, I mean, they don't know a lot about his early life, to be honest with you.
I bet you it's that same pattern, doing shit to animals and fucking all
kinds of it doesn't really say that, though. That's the weird thing about it, is that he seemed to have a fairly normal upbringing.
He just didn't get caught. Yeah,
maybe not. Maybe that's what it is. But yeah, they did, you know, he did have a psychiatric evaluation and said, obviously, psychopathic tendencies, unable to empathize with others, and also getting off on the pain and suffering of others.
Guarantee he was killing animals.
Yeah, they usually do.
He just didn't get caught.
They usually do.
Bet you a bunch of neighborhood cats and dogs went up missing around that time.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it wasn't until July of 2020 that the police came and definitively said, this is the guy. He's the one that did the Hwaseong murders. Like I said, not only the 10 canonical ones, but also 4 that they didn't know were part of the same series. So 14 murders. And also 9 rapes, at least in that area, that were part of that same series that he didn't kill the victims. Although he admitted to raping at least 30 people. Now, interestingly, they did a retrial because Yoon, the guy that had been convicted, he got out on parole in 2009. Remember I said the falsely convicted guy? But he was still considered guilty. But he was like, we have to have a retrial so I can clear my name. Basically, and this like made me so sad when I was watching this on the documentary. He's like, all he wanted, and his friend said this too, like the prison guard. He said all he wanted was for them to come out and publicly say that he was innocent so that when he went to heaven, he could meet his mom as an innocent man, because his mom had died, right, like, when he was a kid. And I was like, man, that is fucked up. That's all he wanted, like, for them to say he was innocent. Because, you know, like I said, that had been hanging over his head the whole time. So they did a retrial for the 8th murder, like, you know, the girl that was killed in her bed. And at this particular retrial, Lee came forward and publicly confessed for the first time, yes, I did all those serial murders. At which point, they said to Yoon, they declared him innocent. I saw the footage. They had, like, the footage of the court thing. And he said, I declare you innocent, and stuff like that. And everybody hugged him and everything like that. So, yeah. So he was very happy about that, you know, obviously. So he's like, I can go to heaven and meet my mom now and not be a murderer, even though he was never a murderer, but you know what I mean.
As if they wouldn't know in heaven.
Right. Yeah. I know, but you know what I mean. It just made me sad that he would think that. So here's the thing. Because of the whole statute of limitations thing, had Lee, the actual killer, Lee Chun-jae, had he not already been in prison for something else, for killing his sister-in-law, even if they had the DNA and they knew that he did it and stuff, they wouldn't have been able to try him for those murders because the statute of limitations had run out. Hmm. So we're just kind of lucky. Well, I don't want to say lucky. We're lucky that he killed somebody else, like, later on, and they caught him for that, immediately.
By luck.
Yeah. Not luckily for her, obviously. But so he's already in prison, like, serving a life sentence for something else. So he's not running around loose on the street. It's just that he would have been if he hadn't.
I wonder what made him confess to the one murder of the little girl to free the other guy. Because a real sadistic serial killer wouldn't have done that. So I didn't do that one. They left that motherfucker out there.
Well, the thing about it, yeah. Now, one of the guys, there was like a criminologist or investigator or something like that that was on the documentary, and he said he thought that Lee Chun-jae was mad that somebody else was getting credit for one of his crimes.
Okay, he's doing a BTK.
Yeah, maybe. I was like, you'd think if he was really mad, he would have confessed a long time ago, but maybe not.
Maybe BTK was, I think, if you go back and look at the BTK case, Charles Rader case, he was mad that he was being neglected, that he never became even a suspect, because he wanted the attention.
Yeah. Well, that's why he started sending letters
back to him. Hey, you guys forget about me?
Years and years later.
You guys must have forgot about me. You forgot about the shit that I did, man. How cool I am. I mean, you forgot. You know, I'm not even getting any credit out of this shit.
Yeah.
Fucking... Which is that's the ego of the
Chinese it is, guys. Yeah. And like I said, you should read that book. It'll blow your mind. Yeah. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Like the weird thought processes that dude has.
Yeah.
And it's like that. I mean, it's just I think the weirdest thing about it to me was that he was just like so matter of fact. Like it never really occurred to him that other people might think it was strange.
And he thought he was on the same side as the police.
Yeah.
You know, we're the same. We're in the same business. Crime. You know. Yeah. Yeah. We're working together, me and you. Yeah. That's the way.
He did. He genuinely did see it that way.
Yeah, I'm a dog catcher. Now make sure your grass is cut. You know, we're symbols of authority. You know, we're authority figures.
Yeah,
you got your shit. I got my shit. We're working together to solve this case together. I'm gonna give you guys the information, and then I'm gonna get famous. That's just fucking nuts, shit, man.
Camp guy said, "Is Raider still alive?"
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. As far as I know, he's still alive, right?
He's probably tutoring inmates or something.
Can you imagine how fucking insufferable that must be? He's just mad.
Probably giving classes and shit.
He's Dennis splaining.
Yeah, well, he's probably like, Calvert, you get your GED. Yeah, it's probably shit like that.
Can you imagine getting your GED English from BTK? Yeah, yeah.
Teach him grammar.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I'd rather be dumb, you know?
He's probably doing something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's that. So, but that's what one guy thought. He thought that that was why he confessed to all the murders, like at that retrial where Yoon was, because he was mad that guy had gotten like credit for one of his murders or whatever. So here's an interesting thing about Lee Chun-jae, the real Hwaseong serial killer, and maybe a reason that they didn't look into him all that closely, because the thing about it was that he was actually looked at as a suspect back then, But that's not really saying much because a lot of people were. Like I said, it was a small area and they were kind of running through everybody. You know what I mean? Like they were, you know, investigating everybody, like all the men in the area, because why wouldn't you? There's not that many of them. But, you know, he just kind of passed them by. The thing about it, though, is that I think all of the victims lived, like, pretty near his house. So he was kind of, like, right in the middle of, like, where all the victim sites were.
Yeah. They didn't fucking stick pins in the maps and go, where are...
See, I think the way that they were...
Live, he's
the way that
people.
They were talking about yeah. it, like, on this documentary, they said, look, the Korean, like, in the late 80s, their investigative techniques were just not all that...
They were just shitty.
Great. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't real... They weren't real up on forensic science. Like I said, they relied almost entirely on confessions, and they didn't really have a lot of... They didn't... They did blood typing and shit like that, but they didn't have the capacity to do DNA and stuff. And I know DNA was kind of still in its infancy even here. Like in
shit,
the,
all you
in
had to do
80s.
Is just take a map and put pins where all those bodies were found, and I bet you he lives smack dab
like, right
in the middle,
middle
of that fucking shit. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's like geographical profiling, yeah. which I always find was like really fascinating. Yeah. I always kind of wanted to go into that, like get into that, because I think that's really interesting. They can almost always like figure out where the motherfucker lives, like
yeah.
where from where the victim
Yeah, and there's
going to
be a traffic flow through the streets, and you're going to go, he's seeing him coming down this road. He's over here probably seeing him.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Because almost all of them were, like, attacked when they got off a bus.
Yeah.
Like, coming home from work or school or whatever.
For certain roads he was watching.
Yeah, had to be. Like I said, this was a tiny, tiny town.
Yeah.
So I don't really know, like, how many roads there were, how many buses there were. I don't really know, like, how often they ran or anything like that.
Watching a road and then seeing where they went.
Yeah.
Following them.
Yeah. But yeah, this dude, he was born in 1963. Interestingly, he came from a very wealthy, prominent family, hence why he had soft hands, I guess. But
soft hand motherfucker.
Well, they speculated, somebody speculated on the documentary, they said this might have been the reason that he wasn't really looked into with any, you know, great, because they thought, oh, well, he's a rich guy, or he's from a good family, so it yeah. couldn't be him. Like, it's got to be some
yeah.
poor crippled guy that can't even climb a wall. You yeah. know what I mean? It's got to be that guy, like a poor person.
Now, the surviving witnesses, it just said he had soft hands and he was what, short?
Well, he was about average height for the time. So he was about 5'6".
And
very slender,
and
he didn't
cover his face up. His face was exposed.
No, apparently not, because yeah. several people saw him. Like, a couple, like, bus drivers saw him. A couple of the victims, like, that were raped, they saw yeah. his face.
What was his demeanor during this?
I don't
angry,
think any.
Furious?
No, I don't think any of them really said. Like, one of the rape victims said that he had a low voice, but that's about all she said.
Right, walked in and said, oh, you stay still. You stay still. Yeah, Shelly, that's probably what he's
talking maybe.
About. Maybe. Yeah, weird.
But the thing about it is that, I mean...
He didn't make any threats? He didn't say anything
I don't know.
To them?
I don't know.
Okay.
But the thing about it is, I mean, he doesn't look like this now, because he's older now and he's, yeah. like, been in prison a while. But when they showed pictures of him when he was young, well, from 1994, when he got yeah. arrested for the sister-in-law murder, he looked very much like the composite sketch. Now, I mean, you know, it was a few years later. He was 30-something. When he got arrested for the sister-in-law murder, because I think he was about 22 or something like that, like when the first...
Yeah, he's in his 20s, killing him.
Yeah, yeah. Which is what most of the victims said. They said, yeah, he looked like he was in his early to mid-20s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he did look very much like the sketch, like when he was younger. So, so he did come from, like, a quite a prominent family. And according to his family, you know, they said he was very well-educated, that he was, you know, normal. He got along with people. He wasn't weird or anything like that. And also, the one thing that a lot of sources brought up is that he had a sibling. Most sources say sister, although a couple of them said brother. It doesn't really matter. But he had a younger sibling that drowned when he was a kid, and that was supposedly some big trauma or everything like that. So, yeah, so he graduated from high school in 83 and joined the Army, because I think that was the... You did that back then, like, didn't you serve 2 years or something like that?
Back then?
Like, yeah.
Well, no, the Koreans draft army. Korea's a draft army.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what
they
I'm
draft
saying.
You.
You just, yeah,
yeah
that you just go in,
right,
like,
yeah.
yeah. So he went in the Army in 83 and was a tank driver.
Okay.
And he got out in 86. And then he worked for, like, an electric parts company. He worked, like, for construction and stuff like that, like, as a crane driver. And like I said, he was married. He had a wife. He married in 1992. Although, according to his wife, He was drunk. He was an alcoholic. And also beat her and their son. Okay. Oh, so he had a kid, too.
Okay.
So he did have a family.
So he was doing the murders after he was married, also.
No, the murder started in 86, and he married in 92.
So he stopped after he got married?
He had stopped after he got married.
Okay.
Well, no, well...
Okay.
He killed his sister-in-law after his wife left him. His wife left him after 2 years.
Okay. Like that wife, okay.
Yeah. All right. He only had one wife.
Okay.
He married in 92. All
right.
She left him 2 years later because he was abusive drunk, and then he killed her sister.
Okay.
And that was the last one? Who was 18. Okay. Yeah, because they caught him for that.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
They caught him for that and put him in prison. And then
why did he target her? Did he say why? Because he wanted her? Revenge?
I guess. I think it was probably revenge, or he couldn't get back at his wife for whatever reason, so he was just going to do, like, the next best thing or something.
Kill her sister.
And kill his sister, who was younger, you know what I mean? I'm imagining that's probably what it was. Like I said, I don't know what happened to the son. Like, you know, poor kid. Jesus Christ. So, yeah. But he is in prison and will not be getting out, thankfully.
So there was no testimony from him as to why he did this and that. He didn't want to talk about it, huh?
Not really. I mean, he confessed and, you know, said how, like, why, like, you know, how he did the stuff and everything. But I don't think he really went too much into it. Not that I ever saw.
Okay.
So, So yeah, in Korea, this is a very, very famous. I kind of feel like it's not as well known over here, but over there, they've made a shit ton of like movies and TV series about it. Most famous of these, obviously, is Memories of Murder, which if you haven't seen it, is excellent.
Maybe you know, we should see it.
I've seen it a couple of times, and I did a review of it. But yeah, you'd probably like it actually.
Maybe they get more into what his motivation was and what he was thinking.
Well, when they made the movie, they didn't know who the killer was.
Okay. All right,
because so the movie came out in 2003.
Okay, so it's bullshit. It's just so, based on what?
So yeah, it was based on the case, but they didn't know who the killer was at that time.
I'd like to hear his side of it, of why he was doing.
Maybe you could find an interview with him somewhere. Like I said, there's not a huge amount in English about this case.
He's gonna be kind of like Charles Rader.
Yeah, I feel like probably.
Yeah. Or Dennis. I mean, Dennis Rader. He's gonna be like Dennis Rader. He's gonna be one of those kind. He's just gonna be the Korean version. I drove a tank. Yeah, I was already. Well, you know, sometimes you know, you got sexual problems, and you know, he's gonna be something like that.
But yeah, but they also made. Well, they made a couple more movies like before. Before they knew who the killer was. There was one called Confession of Murder that was from 2012. There was a TV series called Gapdong that was 2014. One called Signal in 2016. One called Tunnel in 2017. So see, there's a lot. And then there was another one, they remade Signal, or there was another one called Signal in 2018. And there was also one called Taxi Driver in 2021. I'm like, no, not that Taxi Driver, but there was another one about that. Some of them were like more loosely based on the case, but some of them were kind of like, yeah. So, like I said, probably one of the most famous serial killer cases in Korea. Not that there's a huge amount, but, you know, I want to do a show about that other guy, too, because that they brought up, because... He looked also very interesting. Yoo Young Chul, that's his name.
Yeah.
The cannibal guy.
Run some commercials, Jen, then we'll come back.
Well, that was all the stuff
that's
that I
it?
Had
okay,
for,
that's
for the show.
Okay.
So I don't...
Y'all got over. You didn't get commercials today.
Well, I mean, we've been on for 2 hours. So.
Okay. All right.
And I just wanted to, like, get through all the stuff, you know what I mean?
Yep.
They're still talking about the, the membership things.
Oh, the membership things? Yeah.
The membership things.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoy that. They're throwing the roses of sanctity in the smell of sanctity.
The smell of sanctity. Yeah.
All right, Jen, shut it down.
One day you'll be purple level like me.
Yeah.
Well, do you have anything else you would like to...
No, that's all we're talking about. You've been working too hard. I got shit I got to do downstairs.
Oh, okay. So that was a broad...
Aren't you hungry?
I just ate all that lasagna.
Oh, that's right. You ate lasagna. I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just ate lasagna like a couple hours ago. That big, huge piece of it. I'm not.
Yeah, hungry. I got a piece of pizza down there I got to eat.
Oh, okay. I mean, I wish I had some. I should have got some Small Debras while I was out.
Small Debras, a little Debbie.
Yeah. I like Small Debras better. I think the only ones that are left now are those peanut butter ones, and I'm scared to eat those because they're like 400 calories.
Like
each.
550. Those are the big ones.
You know what I mean? It's like I wish I had like a little ones.
No.
But we don't.
Yeah.
I don't think I have like any little chocolates or snacks or anything like that. Oh well. But yeah, so I guess it's getting to be 9:30 and I gotta go to bed soon because I gotta get up early.
Yeah.
So hopefully you guys enjoyed the show this evening. Thank you all of the people that joined as members and gave us super chats and all that kind of stuff. Always much appreciated, especially since we're starting this new side thing.
Yeah.
And we need some money for that.
Yeah.
to purchase supplies and whatnot. What?
Spending $100 on dildos and shit.
Oh, it's so funny.
Fucking funny.
I mean, we should, like I said, we should totally, like, on YouTube, we could even, like, do shows talking about,
we're
giving people advice and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're going to make some funny videos. We got to up the entertainment value of the show. It's getting too stale. The money's drying up. We just got to fucking kick up new business. This is doing it, though. It'll do it.
Yeah,
Just wait.
But, yeah, all right. So, hopefully you guys have a good rest of your evening and have a good day tomorrow, and we will be back on Friday night for our sidetrack show. So we'll be drinking and talking about all kind of stuff, probably including $100 dildos. Well, no, it wasn't one dildo. It was several dildos.
Yeah,
that were $100.
I don't think we could show those things on the fucking show.
Well, I don't know if you can, because I was watching one video on that Cam 101 thing where she did like a long, like 30-40 minute video, like reviewing all different sex toys, and she was showing them and talking about them and stuff like that. So
some of that shit ain't
it
human,
wasn't
man.
Pulled
some
off
a fucking space dragon dick.
I mean, I don't know if you probably can't get it you probably can't monetize it.
Yeah, right.
But she was on, like, it didn't get pulled or censored or anything. She was, yeah, and she had all kind of crazy shit.
I'm more interested in the camera that's coming tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to try that out.
Fucking ride my motor. I'll put that on my fucking helmet.
Well, that's why we wanted to get a camera like that, not just for this, but for other stuff too, because it'll just be good for filming stuff on the go.
We haven't put up a fucking video of me fucking riding my fucking Buell, fucking tearing assing through these fucking back roads. So I need to get a video of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys would like it. You guys would ride with me, riding with Tom.
Riding with
Tom. On my fucking custom XB12. Yeah, my bike's a huge hit at fucking bike night because there's not many of those around anymore. Guy's like, oh man, look at that thing. Okay, look, I gotta
Tammy
go.
Said maybe it's deemed educational. Yeah, I kind of figured, because it is kind of educational. She's just talking about how they work and, you know, if they're any good or not. James Knapp says, great case, Jen. Glad you didn't let Tom sidetrack you at all. Well, you know.
Oh man, listen, who said that?
James. Okay, well, you did some. But at least we kept it.
That's the game, man. That's part of the game. We kept it at about two hours. Okay.
So, you know. But yeah, everybody, thanks for listening. We will see you guys again on Friday night. Good night.